The story of Yosef in our parsha is really the onset story of Golus. Yosef is sold as a slave down to Mitzrayim, which precipitates the exile of the entire Klal Yisrael to Mitzrayim. Well, much as this is a story of Golus, spliced within the story is a different story, which is so clearly a story of Geula. And that is the story of Yehuda. Yehuda is approached, is seduced by a harlot, by a zona, who is actually his daughter-in-law Tamar in disguise. And they conceive a child together. And that child, Peretz's father's Malchus Beis David, the Davidic dynasty, which descends from Yehuda and ultimately Melech Mashiach, the King Mashiach. It is so clear, the master technique of the divine author here in Parshas Vayeshev, weaving the story of Geula, the birth of the Mashiach via Yehuda, into the greater Geula saga of Yosef. It is by master design, really attempting to find the hope of Geula within the doom of Geula. As the Medrash comments here, Acha hischel galus rishon kfar nolad galul achron. Before the onset of this first galus, the galus Mitzrayim, the story of Yosef, well, the seed of the final Redeemer, the Mashiach, has already been set here in this message of hope. Seen this way, the story of Yehuda and Tamar conceiving this child ought to be studied, ought to be mined for all it contains in terms of the great secret of Golus Geula latent inside of it, the hope amidst gloom, the promise of salvation within suffering. There are some deeper secret here in terms of how the Goel Achron, how the final Redeemer here is birthed within the otherwise hopeless story of Golus. So let's dig right in. It is quite shocking what Tamar is doing here. Tamar is approaching her father-in-law and seducing him, and she is doing it based on the premise of Yibum, leveret relationship, that when a person dies without children, well, the wife of the deceased at times is to marry the brother of the deceased, and in rare instances, such as this one, other relatives, in this case, Yehuda. Yehuda is the father of her own husband, heir, who has died. So clearly, Yibam is oh so significant a mitzvah, and particularly oh so significant to Geula that it justifies such scandalous methods as Tamar engages in. So there's some nexus here between Yibam and Geula, something which justifies these desperate measures of Tamar. And when we engage now in a broader search, pulling out our magnifying glass and looking for clues, we find other instances of this mitzvah of Yibam creeping up all over the place in the story of Malchus Beis David, the birth of the Mashiach, the birth of the Davidic dynasty. Aside from this one, for example, later in Megillas Rus, we have another Yibam story. When Boaz, the descendant of Yehuda, as a relative of Mahlon, who is deceased, engages in Yibam with the wife, Rus. And it's a very similar story, almost a sister story, because there too, Rus, the wife, steps forward, takes the first step. The overture step is on her part, when she creeps up on him in the middle of the night in their encounter in an equally scandalous or almost equally scandalous fashion. And there's a third example of Yibam in this family history. And that is on Rus's side of the family, in terms of Rus as a descendant of Moav. Well, she is born from the incestuous relationship. She descends from the incestuous relationship between Lot and his daughters. The basic story there was, back in Parshas Vayera, after Lot and environs have been destroyed, there's death all over the place, and Lot's daughters believe there is no hope for survival. So they engage in desperate measures of their own to produce children, and they creep up on their father in the middle of the night. And it is so clearly a parallel story. Again, a misdeath, a misdestruction. You have women stepping forward to engage in behaviors that they would have certainly never engaged in other contexts, all for the purpose of producing a child. So this is yet another Yibam-esque story in the development of the same family, Malchus Beis David. And I would note yet a final example of Yibam, or at least the concept of Yibam, in relationship to Malchus Beis David and Mashiach. And that is minus the scandal and minus the incest, but simply the notion of producing a child to replace the deceased appears early in Chumash, immediately in Parashas Bereishis, after Cain kills Hevel. So Hevel is dead. Well, when another child is born to Adam and Chava, he is named Shase. Kishas li Elokim zera acher tachas Hevel. He's called Shase to mean he has been placed, he has come to be, to replace Hevel who has been killed. He is a replacement child, which is really what Yibam is about, replacing the deceased. Why is that birth of Shase, which I'm going to call conceptual Yibam, much as the child is conceived by parents, but in other words, it is a conception to replace someone who died, in this case Hevel, in a conceptual Yibam. Why do I call that, why do I link that to Malchus Mashiach, Malchus Beis David? Because if you look in the Medrash on that Pasuk in Bereishis, Kishas li Elokim Zeracher Tachas Kayin, the Medrash links Shase as some sort of foreshadowing hope for Zeh Mashiach. So here we have traced multiple Yibam stories in the birth of the Mashiach, from Yehuda to Boaz and Ruth to Lot and his daughters, and finally the birth of Shase, which is conceptually linked to the Mashiach. And the question is, rewarding as this pattern is, as the consistency of this pattern is, revealing as it is, finding again and again Yibam in the birth of Malchus Mashiach and redemption, what is its conceptual significance? Why is Yibam integrally connected to this family and this story? So I would suggest as follows. Generally, when a person dies, tragic as it is, they, the deceased, and certainly those who they leave behind, find solace in the children, in the fact that there's an enduring memory, in the fact that there is still a living being here on earth who is inspired by the neshama of the deceased and thereby connects the neshama of the deceased back to earth. However, when someone dies without children, it is truly tragic. There is no continuity. It is that tragedy that we call the dead-end tragedy. In this vein, you might recall, decades ago, the way street signs would connote a street which was not a through street. It used to say dead-end. They took down those signs. I've not seen them in years. Now, in our politically correct society, the signs say no outlet rather than dead-end. Because dead-end connotes something very morbid, viscerally within us. Dead end, that's really an end. Well, dead end is a horrible thing. Someone dies without children. So the Torah creates this mitzvah called Yibam, which says, when all hope seems lost, when it seems like dead end, somehow, some way, using out-of-the-box means, and even a relationship that would otherwise be incest, the Torah ensures that the memory of the deceased will continue. The Torah redeems and finds a way forward, resurrects the memory of the deceased using a circuitous method to find hope amidst hopelessness. And this is why Yibam is so powerful an icon in the story of Mashiach, in the story of Geula. For this Mashiach, for this Redeemer, to embody the hope of a people. A people who've lost all hope over the course of the Gullus. A people who seem like they're in dead end position. In the abyss of doom and gloom and hopelessness. Well, he, in his very DNA, born from repetitive Yibums, embodies the notion there is no dead end. Hashem ensures when all promise, when all dreams, when all hope seems lost, somehow by hook or by crook, this is going to happen. And therefore, I suggest returning to our story, particularly the Yibum and the Yehuda story actually represents Yehuda's own personal condition. Yehuda's entire circumstances here in the Parshas Vayeshev story. Vayer Yehuda me'esachav. He went down from his brothers. He's been demoted from his position of authority. The brothers blame him for the sale of Yosef, as Rashi explains. And whatever children Yehuda leaves behind, or most of the children Yehuda leaves behind, seem to be dying out. Er dies, his son Onan, his son dies, and with them the promise of Yehuda's kingdom seems to die out. And then Yehuda is caught, ensnared in a great moral failing. So here we have failure after failure, hopelessness after hopelessness. But unbeknownst to Yehuda, when he's literally in the abyss, in this great moral failing with Tamar, seduced by Tamar, which is the wanton cherry on top of all his previous sufferings, unbeknownst to him, the seed of his future, the seed of Geula, is being sowed. This is what Yibam so represents in this story. This is what the Yehuda story is all about. This is what Geula is all about. Now, expanding the thread from the Yehuda story of Geula to the larger Yosef story in which it is inlaid, the larger story in our parsha of Yosef's Geulus in which it is inlaid, I would suggest the Torah is really telling us that even amidst the dreary gloominess of Golos Mitzrayim and Yosef's own personal circumstance, there is also the hope of Yibam. There is also this hope, this promise, that when it seems most impossible, that there's a path forward. Well, just hold on tight with your Amunah. In the most unlikely places, Hashem will find out of the box methods and mechanisms as borne out equally in the Yosef story. Here Yosef has, number one, been sold into a slave, as a slave, and then all the more so is framed by Potiphar's wife as a criminal, and he's languishing in prison. So now all his dreams of rise to glory seem so impossible, so elusive, but yet it is due to and amidst these very conditions that his dream will be fulfilled, because it is, of course, as a convicted criminal in prison that he meets the Sar HaMashrim, the butler, who will in turn serve as his liaison to Paro to ensure that Yosef becomes the viceroy. So you might say that Yosef and all of our Gullus stories have conceptual Yibam in them, the great message of Yibam: there is no dead end. Hope will somehow surface, not despite the abysmal situations, but actually somehow within the abysmal situations. And a final splendid clue is a Yibam connection which I was able to find in the Yosef story itself. And that is in our Haftorah here in Parshas Vayeshev. The Haftorah records what Yosef's brothers did with the money they earned after they sold him as a slave. Al mechram bekasef tzadik ve'evyun v'avur na'alaya. They sold him for a bunch of shoes. Now, it seems so petty to note, to record in an eternal Tanakh, what they used the money for. A bunch of shoes. And particularly petty considering the epic nature of this story. I really care about the shoes and the images connoted by this pasuk, and was it Rockports or was it Hush Puppies? There must be some symbolism to the fact they used the money for shoes. Well, now we understand. from our Yibum perspective. Because, of course, Yibum is a symbol. Shoes, I apologize, are a symbol of Yibum. As evidenced in the Torah, if the brother of the deceased refuses to do Yibum, there is a ceremony called Chalitza in which the widow of the deceased takes off the brother's shoe and thereby lays his foot bare. That somehow the shoe covering the foot represents Yibum. Let's tease this out for a minute and thereby conclude our presentation. Why shoes represent Yibum has to do with the Yosef story and the greater message of our parasha of never losing hope even in abysmal situations. Kabbalah explains or analogizes the neshama to a foot and the guf, the body, to a shoe. Now let me explain that symbolism. Just as a foot must tread the earth, but it struggles to tread the earth directly. The earth is hard, the earth is harsh. It will bruise. It will lay calluses within the tender flesh of the foot. So it needs a shoe to buffer. The foot needs a shoe to buffer it as it steps upon the earth. Well, likewise the neshama, which is tender, spiritual, regal, dignified, godly, must tread on the earth, must come down to Olam Hazeh, a very harsh place for the neshama. And it too needs a buffer so it won't get bruised up, calloused up by everything it must see and experience down here. And that is the guf, that is the body which buffers. The neshama can walk and advance here on earth much as a shoe. So long as a person, a soul has a body, it has that buffer. And even when they die, the neshama has some sort of guf here on earth to allow it to interact here on earth via its descendants. However, when a person dies without children, the foot has been laid bare, so to speak. The neshama no longer has a guf, no longer has a body to enable its interaction here on earth. And this is why in the chalitza ceremony, the widow of the deceased removes the brother's shoe if he refuses to do Yibum and says, "That's your brother's soul. Look at your bare foot. That is your brother's soul. You are not enabling it to have perpetuation." And for this reason, you will find the motif of shoes versus bare feet figuring throughout the Yibum story of Megillas Rus. From the object Boaz uses to gain the privilege to do Yibum with Rus, which is a shoe, a nal, to the act of Rus when she creeps up on Boaz in the middle of the night of Megillas Rus, and she lays his feet bare, symbolizing to him, "Your bare feet, Boaz. That is Machlon's soul, which is bare now without a body, without a shoe." So this seems to be a resonant motif. The shoe represents Yibum, finding a shoe for the barefoot, finding a body in which the deceased soul can live on. And the way we have expanded the Yibum message tonight, beyond the perpetuation of an individual soul of a deceased, it is really the Geula story. It is the spirit of the Jewish people, which can seem bereft, can seem to have been laid bare when its physical conditions are deplorable. It does not have a good body. It does not have an honorable body, honorable condition in which it seems like all hope is lost. Yosef, the first of the Jews to descend to Galus Mitzrayim, is experiencing this. But yet he was sold for a bunch of shoes. He was sold for the icon of Yibum. And though the people in the story don't realize it, the brothers think they are just purchasing a pair of shoes. Well, unbeknownst to them, retrospectively, the eternal Tanakh is hinting to us, these shoes actually capture what's truly going on here. Unbeknownst to Yosef's brothers who hate him, there is a Yibum going on here conceptually. as will be further brought out and more explicitly brought out in the story of Yehuda, the Geula story inlaid in the Parsha, that amidst all the gloomy conditions, whether are Yosef's gloomy conditions or Yehuda's gloomy conditions, they will rise to glory. They will rise to Geula. Amidst all of this, they will find salvation not despite their suffering, but due to the suffering. Deliverance not despite their distress, but amidst the distress will itself serve as the catalyst for Geula. May we all merit to see in our lifetimes this promise that when we hold on tight to Amun as we all need to, as we face and experience the vicissitudes of life, that we will see Geula not simply in spite of the vicissitudes, but due to the vicissitudes. How everything we encounter is really some greater catalyst for personal Geula, personal redemption.